Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Well, here in the U.S. of A., presidential candidates are busy campaigning and caucusing and trying to kindle support for their particular vision. They're busy showing how patriotic, purposeful, and pious they are, so that you and I will decide that we just can't live without them. I've asked Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, to share some insights into the process and answer the all-important question, does it really matter what they say? Can anyone make a civil and social difference and at the same time protect our religious freedoms? Lincoln Steed, what do we need to know?
Well, we do hope that whoever we elect as the result of this extended process will indeed protect religious freedom. And in the United States, the very best way to protect religious freedom is to uphold the Constitution,
yes,
most specifically, First Amendment, which largely means stay away from religion.
That's true. So are you seeing that happening? How can you stay away from religion and talk about religion as much as these people do?
Well, overall, until a few days ago, I would have said that there was not much talk of religion other than the elephant in the room,
yes,
no pun, because this was both parties in their caucuses coming up to their own internal selection process. But the elephant in the room really is terrorism, which is indeed a religious issue as it presents at the moment. It's Islamic terrorism. And Donald Trump, of course, really went beyond the pale, I think, in suggesting that we not let anybody, any Muslim, in, and I think he qualified it later, people from a certain part of the world, and, you know, there's some logic on that, but not any justice, not any practicality, and I'm afraid that his statement would naturally lead to heightened religious prejudice.
You know, having lived in that part of the country, I'm glad that someone is at least identifying a portion of the refugee situation. We've done a program on refugees, so we don't need to cover that again. But I think it's important for us to realize that when you talk about refugees, there are all kinds of refugees. There are all types of people coming over here. And if we just have this blanket statement, let's not let any of them come in, we are not being even protective of what we should be as Christians. Am I on the right track?
Absolutely. And the United States is made up of refugees.
Yes.
Some so stated and others de facto. I mean, even the landing at Plymouth Rock, they were refugees.
Yes, they were.
Religious refugees. It's interesting, yesterday I had to have my car fixed, and after I put it in, I was talking to one of the sales people and discovered that he was from Afghanistan. And had actually fought with the U.S. Army, but originally his family was from Afghanistan. Then at the restaurant at lunchtime, it passed itself off as a Salvadorian restaurant, but they had a quirky little statement. It said, Salvadorian and Mexican food. And I said to the woman, I said, I didn't think the Salvadorians and the Mexicans quite got on. Yeah. Strange sort of juxtaposition. And she says, I know what you're talking about. I'm actually from Guatemala. And I said, oh, when did you come? She says, well, I came the first time in 1989, but it didn't work, and I was sent home. So she's in legally now, I think.
Yes.
So there was another refugee. And then the night before at a motel, I'd found the desk clerk had just recently come from Lebanon. Uh-huh. So, yeah, there's many refugees. They've come for a long time, and they're still coming. And in particular, the Syrian refugees are not all Muslims. They're certainly not all radical activists. The majority would be Muslims, but I know there's one camp in Jordan with 500,000 refugees, nearly all of whom are Christians. So yes, Donald Trump and others who made jingoistic sort of statements weren't helping the cause of amity between religious groups. It's not helping things. But early on, that was really the elephant in the room type dynamic. There wasn't a lot of overt religious discussion other than, again, Trump maligning another candidate's religion just sort of by dismissing it as a bit oddball.
Now, right there, it sort of puts a flag up for me for a candidate to malign another person's religion. I don't care who is doing the maligning. That seems to me a person who does not have a complete grasp on the fact that all religions are supposed to live together nicely in this country and play together nicely in this sandbox we call America.
That's almost certainly true. These are the things that I think, hopefully, people will judge these candidates on, the little social cues they get, not always the grand promises and so on, but read between the lines and sort of deduce the attitudes of this person and what's really going on. Seems like I'm picking on Trump. He was leading at the time, and he made an appearance at Jerry Falwell's university, and Trump was well received, but I noticed that he read a Bible text early on, or cited a Bible text, and I think it was 2 Corinthians, and he said 2 Corinthians.
2 Corinthians, yes.
In one instant, he signaled that he knew nothing about Christianity on its most basic level.
As a matter of fact, I heard one comedian say that Donald Trump is 2 Corinthians short of Bible.
So. Yeah.
Okay, so we have these people making these promises and saying these things and sometimes putting their foot in their mouth. You know, people do that. We do that. I do that. You do that. How much should we really take as truth here, and how much of what they say should we take with a huge grain of salt?
Well, you probably think a little bit like me. I'm originally from Australia. I've lived most of my life here, but I still sort of look at this process askance, and I think, you know, do people really believe all of this stuff? I mean, it's more like a circus environment than real political dialogue, in my view, sometimes. Because, yeah, they make these carnival barker-type promises rhetoric. And anyone that knows about the Constitution and the way the country's structured knows that, as of yet, the president's no dictator to just do whatever he wants.
Right.
But you'd think they were. Well, you know, things ranging from 20-foot-high fences to arbitrarily changing even Social Security. Nice. I just don't think a president can do it on his own say-so. And if he could, then we got troubles. And people should look at their voting record. They should look at their friends. That's one thing I don't think is done until very, very late in the piece.
Yes, yes.
When they're forming up their cabinet, that's when people start to double guess. Well, he may choose this person, he may choose that. But early in the process, you can know who they pal around with. And they're going to be the people that make up the government.
You know, I had someone on Facebook say that they trust candidates who used to be governors more, because I guess the governor is supposed to know just how much power you do and don't have in the government. Would you say that was a valid way of filtering this process?
Better than most.
Yeah, yes.
It's not ironclad, because different governors have different powers.
Yeah.
Like the Texas governor is pretty much a figurehead. And maybe New Jersey is more of a hands-on guy who can stop traffic at a bridge and stuff like
that.
That's
true. That's true.
But certainly a governor is a fairly high-level response, you know, a job of high-level responsibilities. Governors seem to have a better chance than senators and congressmen historically, which is an odd dynamic.
Now, you mentioned that you trust a little bit more their record when you look at them. And the closer that they are supporting the Constitution, that seems to be good. But have you heard anything in this campaign to date that makes you a little bit wary of a candidate because of religious freedom situations? Have they said anything that you go, oh, that may have a connection down the road that could take us on a route that we don't want to go on?
Well, we're speaking descriptively of these candidates.
Yes.
Liberty can't endorse or attack, or, you know, we're not really in the process, but as onlookers, I think it's fair to make comments on the basis of religion, certainly. Donald Trump, not a politician, so you can only deduce from his public utterances that there's both ignorance and perhaps some prejudice, so there's, you know, there's a question mark there. Others, like Ted Cruz, who arguably won the first round, I mean, by the tally I'm seeing in the newspaper, he got one more delegate than Trump, so it's, you know, it's hardly a either-or situation.
Yeah.
But he's chosen to ally himself very closely with the, for want of a better description, the politically active religious right group.
Uh-huh.
And has had a number of meetings with them, made a number of promises, got their backing. You know, I'd like to think of myself as a religious rightist.
Yes.
But in the political activist sense, I'm not. And, they've had an agenda which is become more hardcore, in my view, less public but more backroom politicking, and I don't like a lot of that. And anyone that reads Liberty magazine knows that we fault this group for, while they may recognize the problem fairly accurately, their solution is problematic, to use the arm of law to re-Christianize or to morally rejuvenate a country is headed for trouble. And Cruz seems to be their champion at the moment, so we will certainly be watching that. And if it goes in the wrong direction, Liberty would comment on that.
Yes, yes.
I think on the Democrat side, there's not so much discussion of religion, but the closer we get to the finisher line, like every other election, they'll all want to polish their religious bona fides, and they'll all suddenly become churchgoers, because while the United States is certainly a secular governmental structure, the society have expectations that it's probably impossible and been remarked on many times to be impossible for an avowed secularist to be elected, which spells trouble for Bernie Sanders.
Yes, yes.
Although I can see him emphasizing his Jewish upbringing and thereby some religious identity.
Well, in the time we've had together here on this program, you've identified two things that really need to drive our decision-making. One is their relationship with and support of the U.S. Constitution, the paper, the rules that we live by. And the second is their openness to religion and their free expression thereof, both for themselves and for others. Am I on the right track by saying that?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
But we need to be perceptive, and writing to an Adventist audience, Ellen White, a pioneer of the Seventh Adventist Church, brought out the obvious thing, that it's our right and perhaps even an obligation as a citizen to participate in the process. Certainly not forbidden for a Christian to vote. But we should do it with some caution, because we share in the moral failings and even the disasters that may come from electing the wrong person.
Yes.
So it's not just a popularity contest, and I think most people at the end of the day know that it's not, but the media and the whole political razzmatazz process can blind people and steer them in the direction of just thinking it's best a sort of a high school popularity election. So issues are at play, and as always, religion is going to be much discussed before this is over.
All right. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine. And by the way, listener, if you want to know more about this topic and others, you can visit the Liberty Magazine website. That's libertymagazine.org. Lincoln Steed has a blog there. Very interesting stuff. You can also get the magazine, subscribe to it. You can also support the magazine and have it sent to thought leaders around the world, people who need to know what Lincoln is saying here and what the writers of the magazine and what the people who are concerned about religious freedom, they need to know what is going on really behind the scenes, and that's what Liberty Magazine is all about. Lincoln Steed, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate your words of wisdom.
Always a pleasure.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.